Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
I had absolutely no plans of discussing Israel today. None. Zero. But then the apologists and the freaks started talking. I'm like, well, now we got to talk about this. Between Congressman Al Green and Senator Chuck Schumer, we have reached a point. You know, I could say this about everybody. I'll try and say it differently. My God, these people can't help themselves from being Hamas apologists. They're not good, decent people. They want you to believe that the terrorist organization is peachy keen. That none of this would be happening if this democracy would just stop it already with what they're wanting to survive and all. It's the amount of, what is the word? Gaslighting, that's it. The amount of gaslighting that is going on in this clip from Representative Al Green, oh, good Lord.
And I'm also very much for making sure that we have this humanitarian crisis addressed in Palestine. There should be mercy and justice. Houses for Palestinians, schools, all of their facilities, infrastructure. These things have been destroyed, most of them. And we need to make sure that we're not seen as the culprits of the world. We don't want to support any more destruction of Palestine. It's time for us to bring this war to an end and to make sure that we don't kill any more babies. Too many babies have died in this war.
Can I ask, before anything, what Palestine, Congressman Green? Honestly, what the hell are you talking about? Why do the people of Texas vote for you? Why is it you've never read a book? Why don't you know anything? Tony Katz, Tony Katz Today, 833-468-8669, 833-GOT-TONY. Now, this is a part of a larger conversation that Congressman Al Green, Democrat, is having. That, I mean, it is clear that we have American politicians on the side of a terrorist organization, on the side of the Iranian regime that wants to destroy Israel and the United States. Why am I not a progressive? Hit volume 9 bajillion. Here you go.
Back at our table this morning is Congressman Al Green, Democrat of Texas. Let's start, Congressman, with the Israel-Hamas war. You wrote a letter that is published in today's Houston Chronicle to the president. What are you asking of him?
Well, first, may I thank you for having me on and salute you for your 45 years of service. This letter goes to the president because I wanted to just remind him of something that I'm sure he's acutely aware of, and that is that 14th of May, 1948, Israel declared itself a state. And President Truman, who was the president of the United States at that time, was the first major world power or country to recognize Israel as such. And that has created an imbalance. I'm hoping that we will understand that at that time, the Palestinians did not consent to Israel becoming a state. In fact, they were vehemently opposed. I don't think that now we need to have Israel's consent to have Palestine become a state. I think that Palestine declares itself a state. I think if we would recognize it, I think that would help us to move this process along.
Let us take a moment to quickly grab any of the edibles we have, because we're going to need to bring ourselves down from that nuttiness. Israel, 1948. It wasn't a question of the Palestinians did not consent to Israel becoming a state. First, there are no Palestinians. There is no Palestine. When do we stop with this wordplay madness? But let's at least understand what was offered up. Here's the map. Here is going to be the place for Israel, and here's going to be the place for you Palestinians. Quote unquote. What do you say? The Israelis looked at that map, or the soon-to-be Israelis looked at that map. We'll call them the Jews, because that's what they were. The Jews looked at that map, and they said, this map sucks. Have you seen this map? This map is terrible. This isn't what we wanted. Look at the divisions. Look at the separation. What is this West Bank thing? What kind of carve-out is this? What are you all out of your heads? This is terrible. This is garbage. Holy cow. Who in the world would want this? But if it's the best we can do, okay, we'll take it. That's what happened. They looked at it and they said, this is a bunch of crap. Okay. If that's the best we can do, we'll take it. We know that the Palestinians are going to live over there. Fine by us. Easy enough. The Jewish state was in these crazy little confines. And the Arab state, which parts of Jerusalem and then heading up towards Lebanon and then, of course, areas of the Gaza and even continuing further south along Egypt. And they said yes. And the Palestinians said, we ain't living with those damn Jews no how. They didn't take the deal. They, then, they, now, had no interest in living next to Jews, being around Jews, having a state of Israel. Their interest was the death and destruction of every Jew, not saying, you know what? We'll be fine. They'll live. We'll live. It'll be good. Nope. Couldn't bring themselves to do it. And they rejected the deal. So when Al Green talks about the idea that the Palestinians didn't consent, who asked them to consent? They didn't even consent for them damn selves. So you think the answer now is to take Gaza and say, let's call it a Palestinian state. If we recognize it, it'll move the process along. And then he continues.
Unfortunately, we have since that date in 1948 to now, we've had an Israeli state, but we've not had a Palestinian state. Israel can lobby for itself at the United Nations. Palestine is an observer.
Let's do a little bit more history, shall we? See, I can look at the UN partition plan for quote-unquote Palestine, and then I can look at the 1949 armistice line because war broke out when Israel was created. And then, oh, look, here's a different view of the map after the war in 67 because the attacks kept coming. And then, of course, there was the war in 73. And then there's the Israel-Egypt peace treaty of 1982. And there's the Golan Heights. And this goes on and on and on. Al Green wants to tell a story of, well, look what Israel did. Look how unfair it is. The so-called Palestinians, the Arab world, has been attacking Israel for 40, 50, 60, 70 years. Only recently do we get to a conversation of, you know what? Maybe we should be talking about trade. That's the Abraham Accords. You know how important those things are? It's a fundamental shift in how people in the Middle East view Israel. Well, it used to be, well, we can't have any relationship with Israel. We have to answer the Palestinian question. And now it's, well, these people don't want to answer their own question. So how about we get involved in some trade and maybe some tourism? And we'll get to that later, okay? Okay, 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 okay. And that's what happened. That's the Abraham Accords. Al Green is trying to get you to believe that Hamas has a point. Look at those Israelis strutting around and building hospitals and creating, you know, medical equipment that'll keep you alive. Just who the hell do they think they are? Turning a desert into a bit of an oasis, developing drip irrigation that allowed the crops to grow, and building condos. Building condos! Who do they think they are? What does Tel Aviv think being a tech mecca for the world and being an international city? My gosh. That's his argument.
It's a good status to have, but it's not the same as being a member state. And I would hope that we would support Israel. I would also support the notion that Palestine should be a member state of the United Nations. Now, I'm saying this, we should do this because there's an interregnum right now. There's this period of time when there really is not a government in Gaza. And during this interregnum, I think it's a great time for us to start the process of doing these things. The Palestinians seem to be moving now away from this notion that there is some means of acquiring statehood other than what I'm talking about. I think they want to move in this direction.
At that moment, I lost him completely. I don't know what he's talking about. But neither does he. Neither does he. This is a maddening portrayal that denies actual history. Then there is Senator Chuck Schumer, who denies his own words.
McConnell said today on the floor that Democrats don't have an anti-Bibi problem, they have an anti-Israel problem. What do you say to him, equating basically what you said about Netanyahu on the floor to foreign election interference?
Let me say this. I care deeply about Israel and its long-term future. When you make the issue partisan, you hurt the cause of helping Israel.
Leader Schumer.
Yes, yes.
Is it true that Prime Minister Netanyahu asked to address the Democratic Caucus and you declined in Israel?
As I said, when you make these issues partisan, you hurt the cause of Israel.
About the specific accusation that you are interfering in a foreign election. You should not show any distance between the United States and a close ally at a time of war. That's what Republicans are saying.
Well, let me say this. I gave this speech out of a real love for Israel. And if you read the speech, we called only for there to be an election after the hostilities had declined, after Hamas was defeated.
Yeah. It doesn't seem to be the way you said it, but can we stop for a second? What is this new line being used?
What do you say to him equating basically what you said about Netanyahu on the floor to foreign election interference?
Let me say this. I care deeply about Israel and its long-term future. When you make the issue partisan, you hurt the cause of helping Israel.
Guys, I do this for a living. I may, at this stage of the game, be pretty good at this. I have no idea, again, what that's supposed to mean. When you make the cause partisan, you're hurting the cause of Israel?
Leader Schumer.
Yes.
Is it true that Prime Minister Netanyahu asked to address the Democratic Caucus and you declined in Israel?
As I said, when you make these issues partisan, you hurt the cause of Israel.
When you make these issues partisan, you hurt the cause of Israel. There are two things to note here, and you might want to write them down. First, the adage in politics is, if you're explaining, you're losing. And Chuck Schumer has spent the last week explaining. Everybody heard it. He said what he said. Never mind just meddling in an election. He gave aid and comfort to Hamas by pushing the idea that Netanyahu is the problem and an election will make things better because then this war will stop. Israel is going into Rafah. Israel is going to take Rafah. Israel is going to destroy the last four or six battalions that Hamas has. Israel is going to kill every last Hamas member that they can. That's going to happen. Doesn't matter what Schumer or Biden or anybody else has said. That's happening. Number one. When Schumer called for an election, he denied the reality that there is a unity government right now in Israel. And after that, of course, they're going to have an election. We've said it here. I've been saying it since the beginning. Netanyahu's going to be gone. If there's one thing that I learned amongst many things that I learned in my trip to Israel just a few weeks ago, they hate Netanyahu. Hate Netanyahu. The speech was a gift to Hamas. But let's get into the second thing. This line from Schumer.
Is it true that Prime Minister Netanyahu asked to address the Democratic Caucus and you declined in Israel?
As I said, when you make these issues partisan, you hurt the cause of Israel.
The issue is partisan because the vast majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives and in the Senate have not shown themselves to be on the side of democracy. In the House of Representatives, whether it's Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or Ayanna Pressley, whether it's the Senate with Senator Chris Van Hollen, the support for Hamas and the hatred for Israel is palpable. We see you. Don't complain about us noticing that it's partisan. It is. Your party is bigoted as hell. And now you're angry at us for noticing? So now you're going to change the game? Change the whole conversation? Well, making it partisan is difficult for Israel. You did this! And maybe you could have nipped some of this stuff in the bud if you had thrown Ilhan Omar out, that Jew-hating bigot, at the beginning. Maybe if you had said clearly that Andre Carson of Indianapolis is disgusting for having a friendship with Jew-hater Louis Farrakhan. Never mind supporting Jew-hater Rashida Tlaib. Maybe you'd be able to have an argument that made sense. The partisanship hurts Israel. You're the partisan. Your party are the partisans. They've taken the side of a terrorist organization, for the love of God. And they want to rewrite history, it seems, while they're on C-SPAN, as Congressman Al Green was trying to do. Israel has the right to exist. Israel has the right to defend itself. And Hamas needs to be destroyed, and so does Hezbollah. Then we can get on to peace, which would be very nice. I'm Tony Katz. Vegas, baby. I leave in a couple hours. It's a cigar convention. I know. This is my actual life. Tony Katz today. You didn't know me when nobody would listen. You didn't know me when I was doing the show from my bedroom, connecting via Skype, praying that three people might be listening on the other side. This took a while. And we ain't done by any stretch. But you know, I do the Cigar and Bourbon Show, Eat, Drink, Smoke. EatDrinkSmokeShow.com. And so there is a yearly trade show, Premium Cigar Association, and it's out in Vegas, and it's only available to those within the industry. We're media in the industry, so we get to go. We sample cigars and talk to people and do interviews, and it's cigar porn. It's ridiculous what is going on. But I'm looking forward to seeing what's new. I'm looking forward to catching some trends. And I'm also looking forward to seeing whether or not this influencer racket has permeated the cigar world to the point where people are saying, okay, we've had enough of this. You know what the influencer racket is, right? I don't claim an expertise on cigars. I claim a knowledge base. There are people who are really refined palates and can do things. I like cigars. I like sharing cigars. I like talking about it, right? So we're kind of like a gateway, an introduction to this world. Same thing with bourbon. But then there are the people who are like, I fit really well into this mini dress. I'm now an influencer. So, you know, give me things. I'm sorry. Who have I offended with this truth that I have now spoken? Who have I offended with the honesty that has poured forth from my mouth face? Because I've seen little bits of it here and there, but now I want to know. Like, do these people really grab hold? Are these people getting paid? Do these people move the needle at all? At all? I mean, there are bloggers out there. There are people doing really good work. They do it like part-time. They're excellent at it. I get what they do. But this is true of cigars. This is true of golf and everything else. The influencers. Have we now reached the moment of, yeah, you're hot, but no, I'm not writing you a check. It's just not necessary. I don't know. And what about the ones who are hot who are also really good at the gig? I'm going to find out. I'm Tony Katz.
I walked in, I was putting gas in the car the other day, and I walked in to buy a candy bar, which I don't do too often, and I looked down, it was $2.29. I was like, I'm not buying this candy. I can afford the candy bar, but I refuse to buy this candy bar because I'm not paying $2.29 for a candy bar.
Right.
And I mean, and, you know, look, and I can you know, afford toilet paper and chicken and everything that, you know, that
just
we
the
need.
The principle of it.
But it used to be that we could go out and do things, you know, go out to dinner, you know, once, twice a week. Now, no, that's not happening. We have to budget everything down to the finest thing. And the cost of healthcare and medical has gone up.
Those are voters in Arizona. And certainly, yes, $2.29 for a candy bar might be too much. But it was that other woman who stated, I can't afford to go out to eat. I make this argument time and time again. When you take from Americans the basic luxuries that prove to them that their hard work is worthwhile, they'll ask why they are working so hard. And that's bad news for Joe Biden. Tony Katz, Tony Katz today, 833-468-8669, 833-GOT-TONY. That's the number. That's how you get to be a part of the show. Feel free. Call in. Happy to talk to you. Happy to answer the questions. Happy to engage the conversation. If I'm spending all this time at work and I still can't afford to take my kids out for pancakes on a Saturday morning, there's a problem. There's a real, serious problem. I will dig into that. But the election is happening all around us. The primaries are still going on, even though this race is over. It is Trump versus Biden. Trump is now saying he would be up for looking at a 15-week national abortion ban. Of course, the left is going to campaign on abortion. They feel that still this is a winner conversation. Look what it did for them in 2020 and really in 2022, I should say, with the midterms. Look what it did for them. Why in the world would they abandon this? Why would we abandon such a thing? We should be all in. And no one questions whether or not they're going to run on abortion as the everything of their campaign. Trump, I think, is trying to get ahead of the situation. I think he's trying to get ahead of the conversation because he knows it's coming and he wants to blunt it. Does the 15-week national ban on abortion blunt the conversation? In a couple of ways. And just as a matter of argument, I'm not in favor of it. Or I should say, for a matter of clarity, that might cause an argument, and I am not in favor of it. Politically, I understand it. You know who pushed for this first? Mike Pence. Mike Pence pushed for this, and then he came out to say that I am not going to be endorsing or supporting Donald Trump. And then Trump said,
what's your reaction to Vice President Pence saying that he can't endorse
him? Oh, I couldn't care less. We need patriots. We need strong people in our country.
So you see how concerned he was about not getting Vice President Pence's endorsement. The 15-week abortion ban does two things. It takes a fair amount of the conversation off the table because it would override what states have done in places where they are at heartbeat or at 6 weeks, etc. And it puts the United States in league with the vast majority of countries around the globe. Now, I have no interest in being in league with the vast amount of countries around the globe. But certainly it would be hard for the left to argue that this is an issue when name the European country they're usually cheering on and touting and saying what a great socialist utopia dream it is. We should be more like this. When they have the same legislation. Take the states out of it. Play in league with the rest of the world and remove the issue altogether. I'm curious to see how the pro-life folk who have been on Trump's side, how they would respond to such a thing. I oppose it because I understood what states' rights meant when I said the words. I opposed Roe v. Wade because it was a usurpation of states' rights. Now, all of a sudden, I'm going to say the state shouldn't have rights? That's a weird thing to say out loud and mean it. The states have rights, and I think the states can create their rules. Politically, I get the argument. You have a 15-week ban. Everybody knows how the game is played. It's where the vast majority of Americans want to be, although I think they would accept 12 weeks. And then you're done with the conversation. The left can't beat you over the head with it. There will, of course, be the radicals who desperately want infanticide, which is to say way too many people within the Democratic Party. But most America's down with it. They want to be able to have a legal abortion for somebody who is raped. They want it. They haven't moved away from this. And it doesn't matter how pro-life you are. This is what America is saying. Now, you can disagree, of course, and you can fight it, and you can push it, and you can maybe gain headway. But not legislatively. I think we've proven that. Where you can gain headway is culturally. When you gain headway and people jump in with legislation, you end up with the Alabama problem. And we should be clear that on this, Alabama's a problem, not on DEI. I'll get to that. You know what? I should write that down. I'm going to write that down. Hold on. DEI. Oh, wait till you hear what Alabama did. But if you're now going to have legislation that says we protect unborn life and we write it into the Constitution, and then someone says, great, now what about those frozen embryos you destroyed? Are you a murderer? And then the Alabama lawmakers are like, I'm sorry, what? Yeah, frozen embryos. That would be life. But the frozen embryo place, embryos are us. I don't know what they call it, you know. Basket embryos. They had them frozen, and then somebody flipped the switch, and then they were unfrozen now, and now they're not viable. So based on the Constitution of the state of Alabama, you're a murderer. Do you want me to read you your rights? How do you want this to go? No one thought it through. No one thought it through. We're going to say we don't want the frozen embryo, ergo we don't want IVF, in vitro fertilization. So we're going to tell people who are trying to have children, sorry, this medical practice, which has had serious success, is no longer available to you. Just saying, you have to ask yourself what it is that you are doing and have done. It is important to go through these things. The 15-week ban takes a lot of the argument off the table and takes the onus off the states. But in some places, it would change what it is the state has voted for. So now the people don't actually have rights. Yeah, so it's a thing. Do I think Trump is wrong to float it? No, as a matter of politics, I think it makes fine sense. As a matter of will it actually happen if Trump was president and would senators and Congress members vote for it? I don't know. I think the real question would be those on the political left. Would they vote for it and say, sorry, you're not going to get infanticide anymore. Nope, you can't have that partial birth abortion anymore. They can't bring themselves to do it. They cannot bring themselves to do it. Give an example where I live in Indiana. I talked about this in depth. And how is it possible that Democrats, they never have a place where they're like, okay, that's enough. A date certain. Okay, that's it. Why is it that they're okay with recreational abortion? And I even had friends of mine who are on my side be like, dude, that's a rough term. It's like, what? Recreational abortion? Tony. T. T, that's rough. Well, it was meant to be rough. That was the point that I was making. And then the Democratic Party in the state of Indiana said, okay, 20 weeks. Well, look at that. They actually put a number to it. I don't know what they would do now. I don't know what they would do, what Oklahoma Democrats would do. I don't know what they would do in St. Louis or Detroit. I don't know what they do in Georgia. I don't have the answer. What I know is that this 15-week conversation is where the vast majority of the country is. And Trump is trying to get the issue into a place where he doesn't have to deal with it. He is not wrong. I just don't know if it would work. I'm Tony Katz. This Ohtani story is crazy fascinating. This is about gambling. This is about theft. It's about the Dodgers. Everything you could want in a story. Except some people are making a good point that doesn't make sense. Tony Katz today. We're talking about Shohei Ohtani. Baseball player. Los Angeles Dodgers. Unbelievably good. He has an interpreter. The Dodgers pay the interpreter. That way they can speak with, and Shohei Ohtani can speak with teammates. The interpreter allegedly has millions of dollars in gambling debts. Like $4.5 million in gambling debts. And the interpreter has now been fired. $4.5 million in gambling debts. You're like, that's crazy. How does that even happen? Never mind how it happens. Allegedly, the interpreter stole the money from Shohei Ohtani to pay off the debts. What? The guy making $300,000+ a year was able to run up a tab of $4.5 million and stole it from this baseball superstar? How did he even get access to the accounts? And then people who, you know, track this stuff and do more sports stuff than I do were like, wait a second. How in the world did a guy who only makes $350,000 a year, which you and I would consider a nice salary, how in the world did he get to $4.5 million in debts? Who gave that dude that kind of line of credit? That much rope, $4.5 million. Who, what bookie allowed this dude to get that over his skis? Wait, what if that's not it at all? What if there wasn't a theft? What if, and this is speculation, Ohtani knew that this was happening because it was actually Ohtani's bets. And then it's like, oh, we're getting into the full-on conspiracy, aren't we? Well, they argue, how else could you explain a guy being able to have all these debts out there and pay this off? How else do you explain it? Ohtani made the bets through the interpreter. These were the losses. He had to pay them off. And that's what happened. I have no idea. And I want to say for the record, I am not making the accusation that Shohei Ohtani of the Los Angeles Dodgers was doing any betting whatsoever. None. Zero. I am making no allegation of the kind, and anybody who did, I would tell them they were wrong for doing so. I think that covers me legally. I am saying this. This is a weird story. I find it to be even more strange that the sports world within the sport is desperate to say no gambling this, no gambling that. And you can't gamble here, you can't gamble there. You can't gamble in this building, but you can gamble across the street. You can't gamble on this, but you can gamble on that. When every day they're making another announcement about how they're tied to some online sportsbook or some casino. You're putting Major League Baseball and you put National Football League in Vegas, for the love of God. You had the Super Bowl there. You love the gambling. You love it, baseball. You love it, football. You love it, sports. You love it. Now, if you have a guy betting on his team losing and he's throwing the game, I get it. It's an issue. It's an issue. But if he's betting on other teams, I don't know why any of us would care. What I am stunned by is the love of gambling. Look, I'm headed out to Vegas, and I go with my co-host of Eat, Drink, Smoke, Fingers Malloy, and he is a video poker guy. So I'll sit next to him in the video poker machine. I'll smoke my cigar. I'll play. I'll lose a couple of bucks. But if you're racking up $4.5 million, you did some pretty big gambling. I don't think this story is gone. I think it's just beginning. It's weird. $4.5 million from the interpreter. The one thing I agree with is it does not pass the smell test at all. This is Tony Katz today.